Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Mem Gimel, and we had just finished the discussion on the bottom of Kuf Mem Beis, where we had said that it must be that Rava actually personally holds that, like Rabbi Yehuda, and that in fact, if it wouldn't have been that he would have been able to eat that raw goose or duck, that it wouldn't have been mutter for him to move it on Shabbos, as he had said it was, even though he didn't, because he didn't want people to learn from him, and instead he moved it on Yaday something else. But in any event, it's only the problem. Obviously, you can always feed it to an animal. So you can give it to your dog, you give it to your cat, they'll be very happy to eat it. So the only way we get out of that was by saying that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, something that had prior to Shabbos, or prior to Yontif, not been royal behema, even though it was royal Adam, it didn't matter because it was considered to be Naila if it got royal behema today. And we said that must be that Rabbi, that's how Rava holds. So Rava is like Rabbi Yehuda. Today we just want to prove, I'd stopped right before the Mishnah because I wanted to get in the extra chance to do the Mishnah and Kalim. So Hokinami Mistavra is where we're up to, which is line two on the Dav. Hokinami Mistavra, the Rava Rabbi Yehuda Sfirale, and that's very reasonable. The Dorash Rava, Isha Lotikanes Lebeta Itzim, Litol Mehem Ud. So an Ud is basically like a poker, something you use to put into a fire and get the fire going properly. And it says over there that a woman should not go in and use this Ud, take an Ud on Shabbos, on Yontif. And not only that, if an Ud broke, you're not allowed to use it to burn. So the reason that we're making it usur for her is because Lamaisa, every piece of wood that we put into the Beit HaYitzim, so you stored your firewood, was essentially meant to be burned. And she, if she's going to be using it as a poker, so she's going to be using it as a kli. And that's others who learned this also, Shasha be metakin a kli. But in any event, it also says that if there was something that had been meyuchad as an ud, and it was a kli, and then it broke, you're not allowed to burn it. Now, for heaven's sakes, according to Rabbi Shimon, there's certainly no problem. It's only Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda that we say Masiki b'keilim on Yontif, ve'in Masikin b'shivrei keilim. Once something broke, then it's considered to be noilat. But remember that Rabbi Shimon, we said earlier, if you don't hold a muktzah, then you don't hold a nolad. And if Rava is saying that we've got a problem of nolad, then obviously he holds of Rabbi Yehuda, QED. Shma mina. Okay, we are ready for our capitan, who came right at the right moment. He's probably tuned in some secret place, so he knows when to appear. Give it to us, Sir Richard. Thank you. So now we get into the question. And again, remember, we are in the middle of the idea of how to get along with Mukta and live a normal life. That's basically the issues that we've been discussing. And all of this is because of the way that Shabbos has now gotten into the issue of the Adam in the Olam and the Adam in his relationships. And because of that, we run into a real problem where we have to clean up. You know, so on Shabbos, you finish eating your Suda. There's a bunch of crumbs and leftover things on the table. What do? Are you allowed? I mean, you certainly don't intend to eat them. You're not going to sit there eating the crumbs. They're not considered to be roi for a su'udah of Adam. Can you or can you not brush off the tablecloth? So, Beit Shammai Omrim, Ma'avirin mi ala shulchan atzamot uklipin, u'Beit Hillel Omrim, Misaleket hatabla kula u'mina'ara. So according to Beit Shammai, you can actually use your hand, as we do, to sweep off the table from leftover pieces that are on it. Now, Rashi learns, big machlokas here, Rashi does this. Unfortunately, we don't paskin like Rashi. And Rashi learns that we're talking over here about even things that are not ro'i l'machal behema. So that's the issue. Tosfos objects to that very strenuously because he says, even Aliba de Rabbi Shimon, remember when Rabbi Shimon does not hold of the problem of muktzah, as we've explained, it means he does not hold of the problem of an automatic muktzah. But something that is bichlal not really considered to be usable, Tainus Tosfos, that even Rabbi Shimon is moda something. It has to be at least more than a rock. If it isn't roi for anything, even an animal wouldn't eat it. Why is it any different than just dirt? You can't just pick up dirt. So because of that, hitain is that we must be talking about things that are ru'uyin l'ma'achal behema. And that is precisely the reason that you'd be allowed to wipe it off. So that means that according to Rashi, we're talking about another of our dispensation issues. In other words, because of the same way that we know that Chazal were careful not to aser the type of thing that would just make your life really uncomfortable. So that if you have a commode, you're certainly allowed to throw it out, take it out, pick it up out of the house and throw it out, right? So the same thing is true over here. We call that a gerev shalrei, which literally means a commode filled with excrement. And anything that we consider to be unpleasant for Shabbos would be considered to be a gerev shalrei. So because of that, you don't want to have all of this junk on your table. And because of that, we were matir taking it out. Tosis, on the other hand, apparently holds that since we have a very simple alternative, and the simple alternative is not to be nogea biyadayim, but to pick up the tablecloth. And we've already seen, we talked about yesterday, the advantage of even where we are going to be nogea, I mean, we need to move the mukta, we have a derech to move the mukta, the preference of always not using your hands directly, but instead to pick it up al yedei dover acher, not to be confused with the din of kila acher yad, which is also not to be confused, remember, according to the Rosh, with the concept of gufos. We've got three completely different issues over here. But since you could pick up the tabla kula, which we're claiming here is Beit Hillel Shita, which in the end the Gemara is going to invert Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, obviously, because we know how it is that we're knowing a local lemaisa, we're knowing like Beit Shammai, which doesn't make any sense. In the end, we're knowing like the Shita that's quoted here as Beit Shammai, but it's really Beit Hillel. But in any event, since you've got the alternative of either at the time of the Mishnah picking up the entire tabletop, we used to have the small tables, or they would have like a board that you would put on the table and you would take away the whole board and you could just dump that into the garbage. And in our terms, it would mean picking up the tablecloth. So pick up the tablecloth and then dump it in the garbage, just empty it. So then that would be an alternative, and that's the way we pass it. That in fact, if it's something that is not roi l'behema, which I don't know how often we really run into that kind of problem, that we have leftovers that are not roi l'behema. But in any event, if that were the case, then we would have to do it the way Tosus insists. And that over there, there would not be a way for you to do it biyadai. So Beit Hillel omrim misalik et tabla kula. You have to take off the entire tablecloth or tabletop. You shake it out, and that's all that you can do. Now, another question is, what about pirurim pachot mikazayit? So those kind of things are roi l'behema. They're just regular crumbs, but you're not going to eat them because you don't sit there picking up little crumbs and putting it in your mouth. By the way, there is also, these are one of those things that are koshim la'aniyut. So because of that, people bichlal are careful not to eat crumbs. It makes you poor by being medactic on the crumbs. Okay. But in any event, as a matter of fact, by the way, some bring a riot to Rashi from this. Because, I mean, if we're talking about in the latter case, things that are beferish ru'uyim for a behema, like the case of Purim Pachot Mikazayis and some of the other things we're going to list, like the pods of peas and or other pods which are generally not eaten. Now, again, I mean, we're talking about here in the presence of Richie, it's very insulting to talk about pods of peas not being eaten, one of Richie's favorite foods, so I felt it would be important to note that. But in any event, I was wondering why you didn't get on right away and put up a sign, you know, actually demonstrating against this Mishnah. But since the latter part of the Mishnah talks about things that are roi l'machal behema, the mashma'ut was, according to Rashi, that he's right, that the first part of the Mishnah apparently was talking about things. I mean, otherwise, why are we separating them out? So the mavirin, that's what Rashi was medayik, some say. He was medayik from the difference. Why do we have a first part, a second part? Because they're really very different. So you could take off of the table things that you're not planning on eating and that are roi l'machal behema, and the sar shalafunim, the sar adashim. Again, we use the word sar, but we mean the pod, as Rashi explains, because that is a machal behema. You see the clear difference in the Mishnah. I mean, it's really much like Rashi, not like Tosfos. Now, how about a sponge? So a sponge, the problem is, the moment that you handle a sponge with your fingers, the very fact that human hands are built in such a way that there is a constant movement, which we don't even note. We think we just have a hand, we close our hand and we hold something. But that's not really true. When you're holding something with a hand, because of the delicate way that your hand works, as opposed to these still undeveloped robotic hands, you have a constant feedback system in which the various fingers are constantly making adjustments for keeping something balanced in your hand. Those adjustments are ultimately putting different pressure sites on the sponge. And because of that, there's always going to be a little bit of pressure on different areas of the sponge, which will cause the sponge to be squeezed. And you're not allowed to squeeze because that's mefarek. You can't do that. And because, or liban, again, we have this discussion many times. So the only way that you could even move a sponge on Shabbos would be not to hold it in your hand, but if it has some kind of handle on it. So they would often cover one part of a sponge with leather. Okay, fine. So then the leather means that it's never going to come into contact directly with your fingers and the space between your fingers. It's not going to be pressed. And therefore, in that case, if you just want to run the sponge over your countertop or sponge or something like that, then if you're careful not to press, then you just have the edge of the sponge and that would be okay. But im lav, ein mekan chimbo. If there's no handle, you can't do that. And bein kach vekach, nito b'shabes veinu mekabel tuma. Whether it does or whether it does is all kinds of problems over here with the Girsaot, which is very unclear why we would say it is Nitl B'Shabbos Bein Kach U'Bein Kach. And so apparently this whole Girsa V'Chachomim Omrim and so on doesn't appear in many places. But okay, the Rambam has it. And it throws in also the additional halacha, which is that it's not Mekabel Tuma. Now, we know the reason it's not Mekabel Tuma. They were not apparently aware of the fact that the sponge actually is a living sea creature. We already had the Mishnah before that anything that comes from the Yam is, by definition, not going to be able to be Mekabel Tuma. And that certainly covers this din over here. It's because of that, a sponge is not Mekabel Tuma. The most that Rashi can say as to why the sponge is not Mekabel Tuma is because it doesn't fit any of the materials that are listed in Klei Midyan that would be Mekabel Tuma. And so he goes through the whole thing. Well, I mean, why would it be Mekabel Tuma? It's not made out of sack. It's not made out of beged. It's not made out of ore. It's not made out of metal. So what is it? So it's not Mekabel Tuma. But there is a very clear reason why it's not Mekabel Tuma, right? Okay, Omer Ibn Achman.
Oh, no. Rashi apparently is medayik that the first part he says Michael Klovim, which would seem to be a greater capacity of eating junk, and only in the Mavir in the middle he goes to Michael Behema. Isn't that specific?
No, it's not. No, it's because bones are not Michael Behema. Anyway. So, Omer Ibn Achman, I really ask you, please, once we've started the next sugya, please don't do it. Don't bring us back.
Rebbe will give breaks. If Rebbe, without breathing, is already in the next one.
I know, but there's nothing to do. So then put it into our on the daf, which you've been so kind as to put up. The interruption level of these kind of things is just not worth it. Omer Ibn Achman, Onu in lo noel beit shamayk, Rebbe Yehuda beit Hillel, Rebbe Shimon. So that, as we said in the Mishnah, the way that we have it is inverted. And the correct way is the way we do it, la'alacha. Beis Hillel is the one that is matir, like Rabbi Shimon. Ma'avirim l'fnei ha'shulchan pirurim. Misayei alei l'Rabbi Yochanan. Yom Rabbi Yochanan. Pirurim she'en behem kizayit, osur la'abdon biyad. Now, this is very much of a problem. Rashi's being medayik over here that you see from here, since it says ma'avirim, doesn't say zorkin. So if you're ma'avirin, that would be a raya that you're not allowed to be ma'avid biyad. Now, Tosus points out that this is wrong for many reasons. Because, first of all, in the beginning of the Mishnah, It also used the same lashon. It says magbiin mi'al ha'shulchan atzamot v'klipin, and it doesn't say zorkin. So you could have made the same diuk over there. And obviously, we're not being medayik over there that you can't throw it out. That's the whole point, is that you do throw it out. Not to mention the fact, what drives Tosfos crazy, is that the Gemara says exactly the opposite in the Gemara in Brachos we had, that Aliba Rabbi Yochanan Davka, he says the opposite. Mutter la'abdan b'yad, it brings a raya over there, b'feirish, that you are allowed, if it's pokas b'kazayas, you are allowed to throw it off. And because of that, Tosfos changes the girsa over here, learning it that it's mutter. Lamaisa, I mean, it's very dramatic kind of kasha. Obviously, Rashi's taking all of that into consideration and not changing the girsa. And what he's learning is, and this is very nogea halacha, because people are nichshal in this. And the way that most of the later Mefarshim explain it is that Aliva Rashi, the way in which we're explaining it, is that these are two completely different circuits. And that in Brachos we were talking about that you're allowed to throw them out in the garbage. Yes, you absolutely are. But what we're talking about over here is that you can take it off of the table, but you can't sweep it off of the table into a place where you're going to be ma'abed et biyadayim, which means, as many people do, first they sweep it onto the floor, and then they'll sweep the floor instead of doing the table and directly, right? So because of that, there's a bigger problem here, and that's what we're talking about is usher. The bigger problem over here is the question of bizoyan eichling. Because you're going to put something on the floor, then the likelihood is that somebody's going to step on them. And stepping on them is bizoyan eichling, which is more than simply zorkin. And so there's really, according to Rashi, two different things that we're discussing. Fine. Anyway, going on to the pots of peas or lentils, sa'ar shel afunim, or shel adashim. Okay, who is the Tana that is saying this? I mean, if you're telling me that you're allowed to move this, and it only became now miyuchet for a behema on Shabbos, which means that you don't hold a muksa, right? Because otherwise, why would you be allowed to move it? And then that means you're going alibet Rabbi Shimon to lesle muksa. But then how do you explain the last part of the mission? The last part of the mission is you can't move a sponge unless it's got a leather handle, right? But if not, forget it. You can't move it at all. Why not? I mean, it's certainly an eno miskaven, and according to Rabbi Shimon, a dover shen miskaven is mutter. So this seems to be going dafka li to Rabbi Yehuda holds a dover shen miskaven is aser. Are we going like Rabbi Yehuda? Are we going like Rabbi Shimon? No, the standard answer that we have in all of these cases is that obviously this may be an eno miskaven, but it's also a psik resha. And there's no way for you to handle a sponge directly without causing some type of squeezing. And even Rabbi Shimon is beida, da abayev rov adamra tarvayu, meida Rabbi Shimon psik resha, velo yamut. Okay, getting into another thing. Now, this is something also is very common. Same kind of issue of the pea pod, except it's in the inverse. So over here, what happens often is when you eat a date, the upper part is what's edible. The inside part is what's roy for behema. So they used to feed the date pits to animals. I like to chew on them. And therefore, there are two different types of dates that we have to talk about in terms of the inyan mamukta. A type of date, which is a rich, full date that can be eaten by people, and is normally eaten by people. So there you've got a problem, because if you hold of muksa, then that means you're only going to be mele de maichel behema now that you remove the human food from it, right? So when you're talking about the tamri armiyata, which are low-class dates, those are things that come from Aram, that you're allowed to move the pits. Because over there, initially, when there was no pit and it was surrounded still by the actual meat of the date, it was already ro'i for behema, because it was chazin agav iman, because those are such low quality dates that they were given whole to behemoths. However, if you're talking about Persian dates, now Persian dates, those are very chashev, they're eaten by people. And then if you have the date pit left over, then that would mean that now, aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, it's considered to be nailat. So what would you do with it? So according to him, well, Shmuel would actually be metal to them, bedavka agav rifta. There's a couple issues that are involved over here. So Shmuel, lemaisa, we know that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon, and we're going to have that sugya later on, which means that it shouldn't have been a problem according to him at all. This is one of the issues that, as we're going to see, and we already saw yesterday, that they were makbid on themselves as being Adam Choshev and were careful to do things in such a way that other people wouldn't come to be Mako more because they saw me doing it, said Shmuel. So the same thing over here. In order for people who were makbid alibid Rabbi Yehuda, even though he himself felt like Rabbi Shimon, so what he would do is he would take a piece of bread and then he would take them directly out of them, out of his mouth. He would put the pits on a piece of bread, and then he would be metaltal the bread with the pits to the trash can. Fine. So that's what he did. Now, since we have a lot of different ways of doing this, we actually give a simon for the names of the mandiamrim that are going to offer us different ways of doing it. So, I mean, it's like a weird... It sounds like a Persian kind of simon, you know, Sharnam Shapas. But actually, it's a Shmuel, Rabba, Ravuna, Amema, Rosheshes, Rapapa, Rav Zachariah ben Afkulas. So we put them all together over here. It's a very cute kind of simon. Anyway, so this is Shmuel Lashitasa. Because normally you would think, now wait a minute over here. I'm using bread as a holder for the pits of dates. I mean, isn't that like a bizoyan of the bread? But this is Shmuel Lashitato. Shmuel Lashitato holds... anything that you need to use that bread for, you are allowed to use it for, as long as it's actually making it completely disgusting, and that you're not allowed to do. Rabbi had another idea. What he would do is he would be metal to them, agav laknadimaya. So he would have this bucket of water that he would set aside, and then he would spit them out into a bucket of water. Now, Tosfos says, Alibeda Rabbi Yehuda, this is also considered to be a dispensation issue. And Rabbi Yehuda is, because otherwise, what right would I have now to be doing that according to him and putting books in now and being Mavata the Kli and so on? So Tosfos says, because Alibeda Rabbi Yehuda also, we needed to make some way to be able to eat dates on Shabbos and not to get into, well, what am I going to do with the date pit? So because of that, Rabbi Yehuda also would be made of that much you can do. So he would do that in order to make it clear again. We said, Alibeda Rabbi, Alibeda Rava, and some, because of that, have that gears of Rava. So Alibeda Rava, not Rava. If it's Rava, it means he was doing it for a chumra that people should learn from. If it's Rava, we just finished a few minutes ago, that according to Rava, the halacha really is like Rav Yehuda. So we'd have to do something. Rav Huna Bereder of Yeshua took a different approach. What he would do is he would just keep putting the pits on the table in front of him until there were so many pits. It was just ridiculous. And it was disgusting. So then it would get a din of a graf shorei. And then he would be allowed to move it because of the graf shorei. You can't do that, lechatchila. You can't take advantage of the dispensation of graf shorei to say, okay, so, you know, I'll go ahead and do something in a way which I could have avoided and I could have done, like, the others were doing by putting it in the bucket or whatever. You can't use that as a way lechatchila. It's if you have a situation where you have a graf shorei, fine. So then you're allowed to move it. But nobody ever said you can make it there in purpose in order to be able to move it afterwards. Rav Sheshes Zarek Lubalishne. Rav Sheshes developed a real skill at throwing these date pits with his tongue. Boom! And he would get them over to the other side of the room or to a garbage pail, and he became quite skilled at playing date ball on Shabbos. So there was no problem. He would just get them directly. And Rav Papa Zark Le'achare Amita, he would spit them out behind the bed where nobody would see them. And they say that when Rav Zachariah ben Afkulas would be eating, you would see him all the time, that he would turn his face to the back of the bed every time he had finished eating one date so that he could actually throw them out to the other side without touching them and just get them out of his mouth again with his tongue or something so that there would be no problem. However, we do have one problem, and that is we need our Richie, who is currently invisible. It's very difficult to do this Hadron. Hadron alach noitel adam es beno. Chavit shenishbira. So what happens if a barrel gets a crack in it? Now, the type of crack that we're talking about is a serious crack where you've got a sudden leak. And a sudden leak always creates the problem of panic. And as we said before, panic is something that concerns us very much. Why? Because it's called, in fact, bohul. Bohul means panic. Odom bohul al mamono. And because of that, we need to take away the panic because it clouds your thinking and it just seems to take over your mind and you'll end up doing things without really thinking about them. We had the case of the panic the panic of a fire. And the Gemara asked at that point, what's the big panic over here? What are you going to do? I mean, it's not as if in the case of the fire, the panic we're worried about is that you're going to put out the fire. But where exactly is the panic when it comes to breaking a barrel that has a hole in it? Where is the chashash of Chilul Shabbos? I mean, you never had a cop pull you over and say, you know, okay, where's the fire, buddy? That, yes, but no cop ever said, okay, where's the broken chavis, right? So there doesn't seem to be something that is necessarily a panic issue. So the Gemara answered over there because of the fact that you might want to be maybe kelim from a place where you, oh my God, I don't have anything to catch all of this wine in. Where am I going to put it? So you run across the street to a neighbor to get it. And that could also be that you'll end up being noitel from Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, and so on and so forth. Okay. So because of that, what is our response to panic situations? We remove the panic. And the way that we remove the panic is by setting limits. So if the person knows that the most that he's going to be able to do anyway is to be matzil sufficient for shalosh se'udot, so then there's nothing to panic about. I mean, whatever I can do, you know. Again, this is only talking about shalosh seudot where you need to put it into separate kelim. If you have one, like we said earlier, if you have one big kli in which you could save the entire bucket, that's fine. We just don't want you bringing additional kelim beyond what is necessary for shalosh seudot. And again, remember that we said earlier that shalosh seudot depends on the time of the day. So if you had already had one soda, then it goes down to two sodas and so on and so forth, right? So anyway, you could tell other people, like we said before about the fire, we could tell other people, come and get it for yourself, bo v'atzilu lachem. But you cannot use a sponge to get up the wine, because we're afraid if you fill a sponge, whether you're going to unfill the sponge, whether you're going to squeeze it out, and then you're going to be over again again either. The idea over here would be schita, which is mefaret usually, or libana toda, as we've spoken about many times. Ein sochatin tapirot. Now, once we're on the question of schita, so how about fruit? You want to go ahead and you want to squeeze fruit. Well, ein sochatin tapirot lotzime ameshkin. You're not allowed to do that, again, because you're being mefarek, and the mefarek is a tolda of disha. You're getting out the parts of the fruit that were liquid, and you're breaking them out from their container, which is the equivalent of getting out the seed or the chita from the chaff. And that's called disha. So you can't do that. But what about if the peirot were left in a container, you were not squeezing them at all, they started dripping on their own. So they got very ripe. And now you've got liquid on the bottom of the container. Says the Tanakhama, even if it just dripped out on its own, it would still be osur. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it depends what the purpose of putting those peirot in that container in the first place was. If you had set it aside in the fridge to eat, then you are not happy for there to be all this liquid on the bottom. And therefore, whatever comes out is mutter because we're not concerned that you're going to come to squeeze out more. But if your initial reason for putting it in the container was because you intended to squeeze it out, so then we are concerned that if we allow you to utilize the mashkin that were yotzim mi'atzma, then you would come to actually squeeze out more. And because of that, it's also you'll have to wait until after Shabbos to use it. Now, when it comes to a honeycomb, and it was the honeycomb, normally what you do is you break it up and it then will gradually seep out. All the honey will seep out on its own. Don't need to squeeze it. So if you had been merasek, you had cut them up on Erev Shabbos, then if they were yotzume atzman, the Tanakhama holds its osur, because we're afraid that you might still go ahead and be soched in order to get out some more honey faster. And Rebbe Eliezer is matir, because Rebbe Eliezer says that's not the derech. Once, if you have a little patience, it's already going to leak out on its own. Tana, now, the Braita says like this. When it comes to wine, the normal way that you would pick up wine is you would try to sponge it up in something, and then you would try to afterwards to squeeze the sponge out into a container of some kind. But that's not what you do with oil, obviously. With oil, because of the viscosity, what you do is you would use your hand, your palm, and you would get a lot of oil on your palm. Then you would go rub your palm over the edge of a kli to get it out. And that would be called mitapeach. So lo yitapach b'shemen, don't get it full of oil and then get it into a kli. Why? Shelo yaseh kaderech she'oseh b'chol. Now, again, because of what we are dealing with, which is how do you interact with the world on Shabbos in things that are similar to malachas or could lead to malachas or look bad, and those, all of those issues, as soon as we got to this part of the Masechet that starts dealing with the interaction of the human with his world, his food and his home and so on, we got into a lot of the elements that are called uvda dechol, doing things the same way you would do them in the weekday. And that uvda dechol, remember, covered a lot of different kinds of things. Now, one uvda dechol is an uvda dechol that simply is against the spirit of the day, so to speak. And that's also an uvda dechol, even though we wouldn't have any chashash that it would lead directly to a melacha, but still, it's just something that is not, as we would say, not a Shabbistic thing to do. I don't know if you could say that in any other language but Yiddish, so because of that, we'd have to say uvda dechol. All right, but that would be one uvda dechol type of thing. Tana Rabbanan, another thing would be nitpazru lo perot pechatzel. Let's say a bunch of fruit were spilled out and they're all over your yard. So what you could do over there, you can pick up a little bit at a time. Malakit al yad, pick up a little bit of time and eat them as you pick up. Now, some of the Rishonim take out the word and eat them, because and eat them is not really important that they be eaten right on the spot, because the heter over here is not because of derech achila like we had in other issues, which would require you to literally eat them at the time. And it just means malakit al yad, period. Forget about the viyocha. But you cannot gather them up into like a basket, into a box. Just hold them in your hand. Because again, shelo yaseh kiderech she'oseh b'chol. Now here, again, there's a lot of different issues. Because some of the Rishonim learn shelo yaseh kiderech she'oseh b'chol is that once you start doing something that's oseh b'chol, remember we had this idea before of uvda d'chol, if it could lead you to malacha, those uvda d'chols are broader. And over here, some taina that since when you pick it up, you're going to also be picking up little pieces of dirt and so on that were on the floor. So we are afraid that you're also going to be borer at the same time, because once you're picking it up, oh, let me watch that, I'll get that off, right? So because of that, it's an uvda dechol that can lead you to do iser. And because of that, so again, maybe if that's the issue, then it would have to be the girsa of ochel, because then the reason that we're not worried about borer is because of ochel. The Mishnah Berurah brings this pshat, and it's actually the way the Ramban learns it. Okay, another way of understanding it is because it just puts you through a lot of tircha, because you got to get it from all over the place. So you're allowed to collect a little bit of it at a time, because that doesn't seem like something that you would do b'chol. The Rambam learns that the problem over here is the possibility of being me'amer, and that this is an uvda d'chol that could lead you directly to a malacha. Now, the problem is, we said earlier, that me'amer does not apply where something that didn't belong in a place is spilled out in that place. So ma'amir is when you have things in the field and you're collecting them in the place where they grew and you're putting them together. That's ma'amir. If you spill out a bushel of veggies that you bought in the store, now putting the veggies back in the bushel is not considered to be ma'amir. However, what's interesting is that as the Rambam brings, that's only where you're only gathering things together and the ma'amir is the simple act of things being in one place. Being in one place is the way that you process grain. And because of that, it wouldn't apply here. But if you would take, let's say, a bunch of fruit that are soft enough to be squished together in the basket, that would be considered to be ma'amar d'oraisa, according to the Rambam. And because of that, over years, since you're collecting it and putting it into a basket, the uvda d'chol is the far-fetched possibility that you would actually squish it together. But that really could be a ma'amar. And because of that, this is the highest level of uvda d'chol, that it itself is the type of thing that is done for a malacha sometimes. That was the third darg of uvda d'chol. Okay, the next thing we had, you're not allowed to squeeze the fruits directly. And then we have this major machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to what is the din of mashkim that were zavu on their own. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, you should know that it really depends on the kind of fruit that we're talking about over here. And the machlokas that you took to be across the board about anything at all that leaks is really not true. So that Rabbi Yehuda would be moda, for instance, if you had taken olives, or if you had taken grapes, where over there 95% of the olives and grapes that are grown not for eating directly, but are grown for processing. So the fact that you decided that you feel like eating grapes, the moment that those grapes actually start dripping into a juice, when you pick, you open your fridge and you take this out and you see that juice there, you change your mind. You say, oh, wow, you know, these are nice, juicy grapes. Let's get the juice instead of eating the grapes. Because of that, Rabbi Yehuda would be moda, that certainly in the two special cases of grapes and olives, that over there, even if I put them away initially in order to eat, once it starts flowing, then we're cheshish. By taima, kivan de leschita ninu, since in general, they are meant for squeezing. The person is going to be yoiv daite. He's going to realize, wow, that looks like a good idea. And even Rabbi Yehuda is made, and we have to be cheshesh, that he would continue to squeeze. The Ula Amarav, but Ula says, not true. Rabbi Yehuda was chalek even when it comes to zeitim va'anavim. And Rabbi Yochanan says, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda in other types of fruit. But halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to zeitim v'anavim, because over there we really are nervous. And then we have yet another maimer of Amar Abba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, that Rabbi Yehuda, which this seems to be outrageous, Rabbi Yehuda is moda to the Chachamim when it comes to zeitim v'anavim. However, the Chachamim are moda to Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to other peros. Now that's outrageous, because what do you mean? There is a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. I mean, according to the way Shmuel is now quoted, there's no machlokas. So why did we make it a machlokas? We should simply have said what the two cases are. So Rabbi Yirmiyah asked Rabbi Abba, I don't understand. So now how do you read the Mishnah? So, b'may plingi. So what's the Mishnah talking about? So Rabbi Abba said to him, you know, you got to figure some things out yourself in life, honey. I'm not going to give you all the answers. Sit down and learn and figure it out, you know. And when you work it out, you'll see. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says, okay, I think I know. I think that the point is like this. There's really three different dargets. There are the type of fruits which are meant in anybody's eyes. They're raised particularly mainly for the purpose of squeezing, which is grapes and olives. Then there are other fruits that nobody squeezes. Now, we don't know from this today, because we squeeze everything, right? So people get these squeezers in their house that enables them to turn every single fruit on the market into a mashke. And it's brought la halacha that in achinami. Nowadays, this distinction doesn't really exist. But once upon a time, the idea of orange juice, who would squeeze an orange for juice? Apple juice, how do you get juice out of apples? And so on, right? So because of that, we really have a middle area where something is very clearly juicy. And that would be something, let's say, like berries. Berries are very juicy. You pick them off of the bush and they're already juice dripping off your fingers. So over there, you can't say that berries are essentially there for berry juice, but you can understand that over there, it's closer to the olive grape than it is to the apple. Okay, so there's really three issues. And that would be mistavra betutim verimonim. The same thing is true of pomegranates. Why? Because of pomegranate wine. People actually like to make wine-like drink from pomegranate, and it's got that same kind of sharp taste that it's actually very popular today. It's become very popular again. They market it all over the place. It's interesting. It was a long time that pomegranates weren't used for wine, and about 15 years ago, people started marketing. It became very, very popular. So the din would be, therefore, when it comes to tutim and rimonim, that would be where the machlokas is. So take a look at the brisa. Zeitim. If you have zeitim that were dripping oil, or anavim, the shemashach miyamiyayin. Now, the word mashach is a big problem over here, and a big machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, because Rashi learns mashach is from the lashon of neharot hamoshchim, things that are just flowing along on their own, and therefore Rashi understands the braita like this. Zeitim that oozed, and anavim that oozed, even though mashach usually means somebody squeezed, right? No, it means they oozed on their own. And vihichnisan, according to Rashi, means, and they had been originally put into your fridge for any purpose, whether it was for ochlin or for mashkin, then ayotze miyam asur. But if you've got berries that you took the juice out of, and the juice of berries is called water, we don't call it wine, and rimonim not that you did it, but that it came out, again, according to Rashi, on its own, or rimonim, that leaked out pomegranate wine, and that had been hichnisa lochma, means it had originally been put in the fridge for purposes of eating, then anything that had come out on its own would be mutter. But if you had originally put them in lamashkin, or for that matter, even if you hadn't specified, but you would just put them into the fridge, then it would be considered to be osur, says Reb Yudah, whereas the Chachamim say, I don't care whether you put it in for ochlin or mashkin, whatever is always going to be osur. Okay, so then you see, indeed, the machlokas over here between Reb Yudah and the Chachamim is in terms of mashkin that came from what? Tutim v'rimonim, which backs up our contention. This is the third level, the middle level between apples on the one hand and grapes and olives on the other hand. Now, because of the strange language, Tosfos disagrees vehemently with Rashi, and he says, Mashach, I mean, come on, read it. It's saying if somebody squeezed it, and then he put it in the fridge for purposes A or B, right? It doesn't say if it flowed on its own, and it had been put in the fridge. That's a crazy way to read the Gemara. So because of that, Tosfos understands the Gemara saying, no, it's actually talking about that you had initially started squeezing it, and then subsequently you put it aside. And the question is, when you put it aside with a specific intent not to use it for the liquids. And now you're going to be eating it. The question is whether that would change the status of the situation, whether it's considered to be miyuchat for Eichlin or for Mashkin, which complicates the sugya a great deal, but at least it fits in with the Lashon. But one thing that is very problematic in what you just said, and that is you're saying that Rabbi Yehuda holds that if you put it in Stam, you say if you didn't say anything when you put it in, that then Rabbi Yehuda is beida that Stam is usur. That's not true. Because Vatnan, we have a Mishnah that makes it very clear that something that is stam is not considered to be usur. And that is the following Mishnah, Vatna. Here we're talking about the question of, even though we talk about tuma, what we mean is heksher, the tuma. Oftentimes, the Mishnayos talk about tame, meaning the Mishnayos and Makshirim talk about tame, meaning that is mukshar lekabel tuma. So, suppose you have human milk that drips on something. Is it considered to be a makshir or not? Now, there's two reasons why milk can be makshir. One reason is because we find in the story of Yael that it says, "Vatiftachet no'od ha'chalav vatashakehu." So she opened up the container of the milk and she gave Sisra milk to drink, which got him woozy, and that's when she was able to creep up on him and kill him. So that means that we're calling milk a mashke. The medrash on this is that the Na'oda Chalav were her own breasts, because as we know, she made love to him, and that really got him woozy. And that means that she had, we're calling her breasts the Na'oda Chalav, which would mean that the milk of her breasts would be called a mashka. But in any event, the simple meaning is that Cholav is a mashka. Now, there's another issue of Cholav being a mashka. And Tosis points out that this would be a machlokas, depending on whether you hold of the Gemara and Nida, there's a machlokas, whether dam ne'echar v'na'aseh chalav, whether we say that milk is essentially converted blood. So if milk is converted blood, then what the din would be of dam would be nogea, the din of milk. But that's only true of humans, where the blood is considered to be dam chalalim. When it comes to a behema, the dam of a behema is not called dam chalalim. Only the dam of shechita is considered to be a mashka, but that's because of the Torah's considering it ala aretz tishpachenu kamayim, which compares it to water. But stam, if an animal is bleeding, that's not considered to be a blood that would be mashka. All right, so now with that background, we'll be able to understand the piece of Gemara that comes. So it says over there, normally, even though, remember, ki yutan has to be the same as ki yitain, because that's how it's spelled, which means that at least the liquid has to be something that you intend and you want and you're desirous of. Over there, it's metame l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon. So milk that ultimately I want that milk to be there, then a nursing mother wants the milk to be there. So then even if the milk drips, since the milk itself is l'ratzon, the dripping itself doesn't have to be l'ratzon, and therefore it will be maksha. Maksha enkein, the chalav of a behema, it's not metame unless you wanted it to actually be there, because that is what makes it a mashka, that gives it a din of makshirin. Amar Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Akiva says, I disagree. I say that it's a kal v'chomer. And the kal v'chomer is that even if you would not want it to come out, it's definitely considered to be a mashka. Because if even human milk, and human milk is basically meant for human infants, you don't milk women and sell it in tenuva. And so the din over there is it's miyuchad l'ktanim, then it's metame l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon. And anyway, you're telling me that that kind of milk is considered to be a mashka that is actually make something mukshar. So animal milk, which is processed and which is drunk by everybody, and people are making a living off of milking animals, and that's miyuchad bein l'ktanim bein l'gdolim. So obviously that kind of milk is something that is fundamentally desired, and therefore in odin shiatame bein l'ratzon bein shelo l'ratzon, so it should certainly be metame. To which the Tanakhama responded, oh, it's a big difference. You know why it's possible that we're saying that the Mishnah is telling me that human milk is considered to be a makshir? That's because if this woman had been cut and there was bleeding, which is called dam magafata. So the din over there is that dam, because of dam chalolim, which applies only to humans, and Mali katle kule, mali katle palge, the Gemara says, it doesn't matter. Once you cut through the body, that's a type of dam chalolim. That's because the dam of her magafa is also being makshir. But therefore, we're going to make a kal v'chomer to animal blood where there's no such din, and therefore the relationship of the chalav to the dam is not going to be something that we're going to take for granted at all. We're left to a completely different structure over there, which is the fact that basically we want this milk because we're processing this milk as a mashka. There's a whole different reason. So I cannot use one as a raya to the other. So over there, I should say that it would be metame shelo l'ratzon, where over there, if it had been dam magafata, would be tahor. So maybe the only reason that I'm saying that the chalava isha is makshir is because it's no different than dam magafata, where over there we say, obviously she doesn't want to get this wound. And nonetheless, we're saying that it is considered to be dam chalolim. Masha inkin over here, the dam of the behem is bichlal not considered to be a mashka. So maybe the thing that makes the chalav the mashka is the fact that you want it to be there. To which Rabbi Akiva said, I have an answer to that, because I hold that actually the chalav is more chomor than dam. And you cannot ask me, well, I mean, if the dam is going to be tamei, so then the cholov is going to be tamei. No, not true. Milk is actually more chomer. I'll prove it to you. Let's say that this animal has an infection in its udder. So you're going to be milking this animal basically as a refuah, and that is going to be considered a liratzon, because you wanted the milk to come out. Remember, you don't want necessarily that it should come out to drink. It just has to be that I want it to come out. Okay, so I want it to come out. But if I'm makis dam to refuah, so let's say I need to lower the animal's blood pressure, the blood that I call to come out is not going to be makshir, because once again, it's not considered to be dam chalolim, and it's not dam shchita, which is compared to al aretz tishpachenu kamayim, right? So therefore, what do you see? That the din of the chalav is more chomer than the din of the dam. So the same thing is true. Don't ask me, well, I mean, the dam of the behemoth wouldn't be makshir, so why would the chalav of the behemoth? It isn't so. You see that we are certainly going to give it a din. Amrulo, so they said to him that I'll prove to you that that's a ridiculous argument, because salei zeitim va'anavim yochichu, what is the din of a basket full of olives or grapes? So the din over there, I'll show you that you're making a fundamental error. You cannot compare your rutzen to a case of shalol rutzen at all. Over there, we have mashkin that are yotzi mehem. So if you've got something that comes out of them on their own, if you wanted it to be that way, l'ratzon, it's tameh. But if it's coming out shalol l'ratzon, it's not tameh, because then we do not consider it to be a mashkin at all. So you see that what defines a mashkin is entirely, even where something is like the ultimate mashkin, which is yayin and shemen, that if you don't want it to be there, they are not called mashkin at all. So how are you going to say that the milk from an animal is going to be more chomer than the ultimate mashkin? If I don't want the milk, I don't want the milk. Now, let me just ask you how you understood that statement, okay? When it said l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon, I mean, I'm assuming that what it means is, l'ratzon means that I am happy that this liquid is coming out. And shalol ratzon doesn't mean that I say, no, I don't want it to come out. It just means it was put there without my really saying one way or the other. In other words, that's referring to stam. So the word l'ratzon actually means really l'ratzon, and the word shalol ratzon then just means I didn't say that this is what I want. Okay, now here's my kasha. If that's true, so then let us continue. Uma zeitim va'anavim. So now, think to yourself, if zeitim anavim, which are b'nei shchita, they are always used, 95% of the cases, for shchita, nonetheless, it's saying over here in the Mishnah, no, if you don't, it's shalol ratzon, meaning that you didn't say that you had a desire for it, was stam. Okay, the Mishnah is saying it was stam. And nonetheless, we're saying over here that it's lo klum. We don't consider it to be a mashkin. You're trying to tell me that tutim v'rimonim, where over there it's certainly not b'nei shchita, and the norm is we're not using it. So isn't it obvious that anything that comes from that without me saying anything about it, if I didn't say I want it, then that stam is clearly, even according to the Chachomim, kol shekein aliba de Rebbe Yehuda. I mean, if Rebbe Yehuda was arguing with the Chachomim, even in the extreme cases, if over here the Chachomim are saying that even the extreme cases are not considered to be a mashkin, you're telling me that Rebbe Yehuda would hold about the case of the tutim and the rimonim, that stam is considered to be the equivalent of my saying I want it? That's crazy. I mean, the Mishnah is shouting that that is the opposite, and that even the Chachomim would say that that type of stam is considered to be the, then that is a complete contradiction to what we're saying over here. So because of that, it makes no sense the way you just said it, that Rebbe Yehuda would be made of his stam. Says the Gemara, you made a big mistake over here. You said, and I assume that when it says l'ratzon, l'ratzon means he specifically states that he wants it, and that shalol l'ratzon means stam. That was a very nice assumption, which led you now to come to this conclusion that what we said about Rebbe Yehuda makes absolutely no sense. Maybe that was wrong. The way to understand that when it said in the Mishnah in Makshirin, it says l'ratzon, that's the point, is the opposite. L'ratzon means I didn't say anything. And shelo l'ratzon means I say, no, I want to eat this. I do not want it to start leaking on me. And that means that he said, lo nechali, I do not want this juice, but maybe enochinami. If I wouldn't have said anything and it would have just been stam, I would have assumed that it is considered to be roy, in which case it fits exactly what the Braisa said in Rebbe Yehuda. Or there may be a difference. There may be a simple difference that avoids the whole problem. And that is, note that we're talking over here about Salei Zeitim Va'anavim. It specifies, we're talking about baskets, okay? What's special about baskets? What's special about baskets is why we say he's a basket case. Because what it means is, it's useless. You're not going to be able to keep anything in it. It's all going to ooze out. So if this guy's got any brains at all, if he's a basket case, nothing is going to be left in it, right? So that's the idea. If I'm specifying a basket case, so then kivan de le'ibut kaime, if the point of putting it in a basket in the first place is that I'm telling you straight out, I'm putting it in here because I really don't care if it oozes out wine or oil and it's just going to go and leak out on the ground, doesn't bother me. And that means that mi'ikora afkuri mafkirlu, the guy is basically, even though he didn't say anything, you can't get a more clear-cut statement of, I am not interested, which means that if you're talking about in the Braita where it does not say we're talking about baskets, you're talking about regular containers you put in your fridge. Over there, eino chinami. It could be that even without me saying anything about it, that I would not, you know, assume one way or the other. And maybe without me saying I don't want it, maybe that's still considered to be, maybe not necessarily. The Braisa over there, we're talking about, I put it in a real Tupperware container. So I have no reason to think that the guy doesn't want it. So if he put it in a Tupperware container, inochinami, I could say that stama is that I'm very happy for it to be there. And therefore, the whole issue does not apply.